He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Here we are.
Good morning,
Indeed.
Too.
And we are going to start off the show talking about a couple of topics that Jay and I discussed on our en route over here. One is the dealership experience, and the other is we're going to talk about some of the driving raves that each of us is experiencing. And we
I
have
can
touched
help.
Upon we well, we don't want you in it yet, but we are seeing more and more of this, especially since part of the raves are. Partly because of the daylight savings time change and how early it's getting darker on the road. And I'll start by saying, guys, listeners who are listening to us, turn your headlights on sooner than you are right now. And also, Jay will chime in and say, turn on the headlights. Don't use your driving lights at nighttime. Because?
You've just said it. I don't need to repeat it, but
well,
I will.
I will chime in and say simply that there are places on this planet, in North America, on this continent, where people keep their headlights on all the time.
Well,
for safety.
For safety.
In Canada, it's the law. And that's what brought on daytime running lights, because they are the suitable alternative to having the actual headlights on, and they are on all the time in most cases, unless you have a default off switch on your turns on your light stalk or your light switch. But even on my Jeep Cherokee, I can turn the light switch on the dashboard off, and the driver's lights, which are LEDs on the Cherokee, remain on no matter what. But there are a lot of people are using the driving lights unknowingly because they think they can see the road ahead of them, but they are dimmer in most cases than the headlights.
The problem is not.
And the other part of it is that most of the time, only the front lights are on, so the rear lights of your vehicle are not on behind you when you are using just your daytime running lights at nighttime, which makes a vehicle particularly hard to see in the dark.
Are you telling me that people don't know the difference between their headlights and their...
Yes, there are many people who have
no
clue because...
Well, here's the problem. People are people, but again, it's different standards with different cars. And some cars have auto running lights, and you just put the switch on auto, and that's the best thing to do. The lights never...
They are always on when they need to be on.
And they go off
when they don't have to be on. And the daytime running lights will stay on in both cases.
Were you saying something?
I was trying to. When the switch is on auto, you don't have to worry about turning the lights on or off. You can park the car, lock the car, drive away, the lights go off. Everything is fine. Some cars have daytime running lights. For instance, one of my cars... Subaru has daytime running lights, so when your light switch is on off, you still have those front lights that are on, and it's fine. And when it gets dark, you actually see that your dashboard is not lit, and it's a kind of a clue to turn your lights on. And so your lights end up being on most of the time. I mean, as soon as it starts getting dark, you realize you have no light on the dash. The problem starts becomes more serious when those running lights have dashboards that do light up at night or are always lit, and therefore the only difference is the little green light switch somewhere in the dash that will tell you that your headlights are actually on. And unless that little green light is on, your rear lights are not on. And but the problem is, again, a bunch of different systems.
I was just going to say, because
there is no consistency to those systems. Jay is correct. But the worst situation is people who don't have either DRLs, which are daytime running lights, or headlights on as it's gotten too dark to easily see cars coming at you in the dark. And as I ran into that situation last evening, and there were cars with lights on in front, and there were cars and lights on in the back, and...
What time was that? Because we're in the Northeast, and we might as well...
Any time right now after 5 o'clock. But
okay, let's change the subject a little bit.
Okay.
With lights. Who drives with their fog lights on?
Too many people.
Why?
Have no clue.
But is it a problem or is it not a problem? It's a debate here.
I think it's a question of whether or not they know what they're doing when they're turning on various things on their dashboard. I see people with their fog lights on all the time. I have to manually turn mine on with a separate switch on the vehicles that have them, and not all my cars have fog lights because I don't believe in them as an option.
My point is, why not run with the fog lights on?
Because they just the fog lights. You can't turn my fog lights on without the headlights.
No, I understand, but your headlights with the fog lights versus not the fog lights. You see better.
I don't think you see better. Have you ever tried to see how good the fog lights are on cars as you're driving? Try to see how much of the pavement gets lit up by turning the fog light switch on and off while you're looking down at the pavement. Make sure no cars are coming at you because this could be dangerous. Don't see much lit up.
What's the point?
Yeah, what is your point, Jay?
I just wanted to ratchet up a bit in the conversation.
Did.
But actually, I actually drive with my fog lights a lot when I'm driving on little country roads because they actually...
The way that I found in my Volvo originally is the fog lights were terrific because they illuminated the country road itself.
On the sides.
On the sides.
Thank
and I remember many, many, many years ago in UK, as it happened, having to drive through fog with the door open, you know, so that you could see the what I called cat's eyes, those things
Belgium,
in the road.
Yes,
so
I have done that before,
because
too.
That's because you can't see what's ahead of you. But
I
that's
will be
my
combative
own.
About this because who looks at the sides of the roads when they're going down the road with fog lights on just to see how much of that side of the road is actually lit?
If you can't see, living on Music Mountain Road, I have to say that between brights, regular, and fog, there have been times when I had a better sense of where I was with the fog lights.
If it's foggy out, I would agree with you.
That's
but I
all.
Bet not in clear night conditions or driving conditions. The fog lights are of little use,
okay.
But people still have them on. When you
do
see a car coming at you with four lights on, two below where the headlights are, that probably means the fog lights are on.
And I think that people have, you know, there are people who are set.
I hope our listeners are having fun listening to this.
I guess
it's ridiculous to go on as
but
much
what
as
I'm
that.
Wondering about, what really what I'm wondering about is people either are putting their lights on or not, and they should. The point, I think, is that they should.
I will rant one more time about fog lights, and those are
why?
The rear end fog lights that Audis and BMWs have, and people drive with those on in clear driving weather, and they are blinding to the eye.
I will agree with Robin on this one, and now
Thank
we can
you.
Move on.
Now we can move on. You go to your topic.
Which one?
You got a list, so let's go.
Autonomous driving, quickly, because we come up with that every week or other week. New Audi A8 coming in the spring or fall of 2018 as a 2019
level
model.
Level 3 or level 4?
Level 3.
Yeah.
First, it will be, I think, if not one of the first level 3 autonomous cars, which means that in certain driving conditions, it will drive itself with no driver input. And those conditions right now will be divided highway and limited to 37 miles an hour.
Right. And you won't probably be on a divided highway except in a town where you've got four-lane streets with a divider in the middle like Great Barrington or whatever it is.
Robin, most people in this country live in and around cities with a lot of divided highways.
That's correct. I'm not disagreeing, but they're not going to be on the divided highways we drive on at 37 miles an hour. They're going to get rear-ended. You will agree with that, too, I know. Okay.
Your
I agree
turn.
With you on the autonomous driving thing. The next thing I'm going to bring up will be the electric, the pending Jeep Wrangler hybrid electric, which is due sometime around 2020 or 2021. And I'm sorry if I'm taking it away from your list, Jay, but we can chime in. There's a lot of noise out there about the 2018 Jeep Wrangler coming out because there's a lot of new stuff in it, mostly good. They've got some aluminum, but it didn't go all aluminum. It looks very nice. It looks very much like the old one, although there's a slightly different rake to the windshield, but I am assured that the windshield is still foldable. If you look at the current line
like
of Jeep Wranglers, you look like a cow. Yes, we'll get to the shoebox look in a minute because it's good, but I have not seen anybody with a new Wrangler of recent vintage with the windshield down and the roof off. As a matter of fact, what I don't see is how you I don't see a hook on the outside of the front windshield, which I think used to be on the old ones, where it would latch to a U-hook that's on the in the center of the hood. So I'm not exactly sure what happens when somebody tries to fold down the front windshield of a Jeep Wrangler in this day and age. But the new one is going to have that capability as well, and I'm not sure how many bolts you've got to take out of the structure of the windshield where it's attached to the hood frame of the Jeep to get the windshield down, but you can still do it. But the thing about the Wrangler Hybrid, I can't imagine a true and Jeep enthusiast of ever wanting to own a hybrid Jeep Wrangler. And if you are a listener out there who's a Jeep Wrangler aficionado and you'd like to have one, email us at this radio station and let us know your thoughts on that.
What's the difference in mileage?
Well, we don't know anything about that. It's not out there. But that this is all because of the EPA rules, and this is the way some manufacturers – look, Ferrari's going e-hybrid. Aston Martin's going hybrid or all electric. They're all – the car manufacturers are going to have some kind of hybridization in many of their car lines, all because they have to somehow figure out how to up their miles, their average miles per gallon for the line of cars to – well, I don't know what's going to stick at 35 miles or 40 miles.
No, it's because it's the right thing to do.
Well, aside from the ecological thing, and I'm delighted that Jay is taking an ecological look because he's not often that way, but it is the ecological thing to do, and kudos to you, Jay, for being on board with that. In any event, it's not coming totally because of that. It's coming because the miles per gallon averages are being thrust upon us, and our current administration has yet to overturn them as far as I can tell. So it's like a steamroller out of control. Jill, you have something?
No.
Okay. Jay, you've got something to chime in, I'm sure.
Well, I wanted to change topics. And
okay,
or I was
let's
going
go
to start
your list.
This.
I interrupted your list.
No,
I apologize.
Buying cars, dealer experience.
That was how you started the show, in fact. Right. So who had a dealer
and
experience?
And we got off that
pretty
quick.
I had a dealer experience this weekend. I went with a client to buy a used car in a dealership, in a pretty big dealership.
Doesn't matter, big or little.
Torrington. And
who could that be, I wonder?
It doesn't matter.
It's not that it's just like, you know, Robin can have a Torrington experience, Jill can have a Torrington experience. It's just...
We got Jay's now.
So this person is motivated, knows what he wants, is not financing. He's going in, he's buying a car, and he's walking out the door. Period, end of story.
You think?
It took 2 hours.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
2 hours to be sat down at a desk, get all of his information, get all of my information, because I did get a little...
testy?
No, I got a referral fee.
Oh.
It was really good.
Did they give it to you?
Is that true? No, I don't mean it,
yeah.
But is that something that
people
can do?
Yes, and I have often referred people to the same dealership Jay's talking about, and they've used my name, but I have yet to receive a check.
But it's less about the check and more about the fact that that's something that someone can do.
That is something that, yes, the salesman that sells you a car will say.
It's not a whole hell of,
it's not
good.
About the money. I listened to our last week's show. It was very good. But the main thing was, okay, so you have to buy a car. Some people either go, and they're terribly anxious. And some people are like, let me at it. So I'm thinking now about the ands, and so, wow, someone gets a referral fee. That's not a bad thing.
So we show up in the dealership, and we have three or four cars in mind that we've gone through the list, and we know those cars are there, and we say, okay, there's a – and these are, you know, anywhere between 2012 and 2015 cars.
Okay.
Certified pre-owned or something like
low,
that.
Low, you know, 20 –
low mileage.
Some had 25,000 miles, others closer to 90. It took the sales guy, I think, 20 minutes to find the keys to two cars and find the plate. And then we had to go on the lot and physically find the cars, except that I actually knew what we were looking for, and we found the cars. And we took two cars for a ride, and my client finally said, that's it, I'm done. We're buying one. And we sat down and said, I'm buying this one. And he had made the decision. He knew what he wanted. And it still took a lot of time for the guy to write up the paperwork, go to the sales manager, get the stamp of approval, come back, and then Robin is going to love this one. The guy had added, I don't know how many hundred dollars for, guess what?
Paint protection.
No, the other one.
Glass etching.
So the guy says, no, I don't want this. And he crosses it off. You know, my client crosses it off.
What happened to the paperwork fee?
So the paperwork fee was on, and you know, some of it always stays and doesn't go away. So we say, okay. And he goes to the sales guy, goes, can I go now? And the guy goes, no, I have to go back and reprint it. And so he goes back, and it takes another 10 minutes to rewrite that order sheet and come back. And he says, can I go now? No, you have to sign it, and I have to give you a copy. It was ridiculous.
And I would just like to interject that I am like that client, and we have been through this. And only after all that is when they're supposed to go through the car with you. God should save us. So, you know, by then, you know, as a client, I'm incandescent because I just wanted to buy a car and leave and still not have to go straight to bed. What happens is you kind of don't have the experience.
You've got these hidden things. This is the thing. You have these hidden things that different dealers have different policies and how they decide they're going to make you aware of them as a buyer. To Jay's point, I had the same situation with a friend of mine who I did not refer to the dealer, but I happened to be at the dealer at the same time as he was there buying a car. And this is a few years back. And he also was a cash capable, let's write the check and get it done in 30 minutes and let me get on my way type of guy. And it took him 2 hours to get out too. And he couldn't figure it out. He actually got a little testy, I think, as well, because they dealerships, there's a lot of scuttlebutt in the automotive news world about how dealerships are supposed to be learning how to streamline the delivery process, because it is a very annoying process for many people. Often those who know what they want, know enough about the car situation, can write the check instead of going through the hassle of the financing situation. And all they want to do is, as Jay said, get the car and go. And I don't think some of these, I don't know where those dealers are that have streamlined delivery procedures, but they're not around the Northwest Connecticut corner and nearby New York, as far as I can tell.
This is a big dealership. It's a modern dealership.
It is, but it's still here.
But some of the process is just antiquated, and I think you probably saw that same a presentation on one of the videos from Auto News, Automotive News. This big dealer in, I think, Virginia and one of the Carolinas was explaining to a group of dealers that the business model is changing.
They better get with it or else.
And they better get with it. And one of the thing was, you know, he's saying it's about personalization, optimization, and digitization.
Okay, yes. But my question is, if you go to a dealership that has one of, you know, many, many different cars, like CarMax, that's what I was thinking of. Yep. Is it the same? Is it still the 2 hours?
I've never bought a car through CarMax. Let me tell you.
I honestly don't know.
The CarMax up near Westboro, Mass, which is where I was over the weekend, is an absolutely huge dealership. I think it's bigger than any large Ford dealership. And I was looking, as I was driving fairly quickly along the route by their parking lot, the cars in there, I saw actually old Lincoln Continental or a Lincoln or a Mercury body style sitting there also. So they buy or they get cars that are in great condition, all types of models, and they're just lined up in a row. And to talk to Jay's thing about salespeople not being able to find cars in the lots, that is a big bugaboo that
here's the moral of the story.
Yeah.
Walk in the dealership, know what you want, and be prepared. In this particular case with this client, it was easy. He didn't need financing. He knew what he needed and wanted it done quickly. And even though the process was antiquated and still slow because the sales guy had to go do the song and dance with the managers, it went, and that's just, you know, that's the mind-boggling part. It was still a relatively simple and quick process. We walked in, we said, this is the car, or one of the two or three cars, no financing, no etching. And in the end, you know, he was ready to pay the price, the window sticker price. And then, you know, I had to go and say, while we were sitting there, I came up with Auto Trader and found all the exact same cars with all the same mileage within 200 miles. And I said, no. This is the price. This is the asking price for the same car. This is what this price is, the car is worth. And guess what? We walked away with
savings.
Savings.
Yeah. And people just need to know that.
And yeah. Once you show, you know,
they cave.
Yeah. They
and it's not to make them cave.
It's not even about caving. It's in many things. If you are willing to not ask for a reduction, then people aren't going to just say, "Oh, and here, let
that's
me just
true.
Knock 20% off for
that's
you."
That's true, and you can negotiate used car prices, but it's knowledge can be the king along here. But to Jay's issue about, they thought they had a pretty simple deal going, and then when they went over the paperwork, they discovered that they had slid in, I guess, etching costs or something that they didn't discuss with you the entire time.
No, that was just one cheap shot they tried.
But there could have been a couple of others, and you need to be very careful when you think you've got a deal done. As I think I said in last week's show, mm-hmm. you think you've got a deal out the door price. Suddenly it changes after the salesperson has gone off to his manager, F&I, or whoever it is, and slides you towards the next layer of getting out of there. Things have changed. And the things that have changed are things that you don't think of when you're sitting there all enamored of this, excited about getting this car you're going to get. And you've negotiated a price with a salesperson who actually isn't really authorized to accept that price,
so
apparently.
The easiest thing to say for people who don't just love this, is if you have to buy, no one knows what they don't know. Fact. So if you don't know, find someone that you can go with that will just help you through that. And knowing that there's a referral fee, even better, because that person's going to get compensated. Yay. End of story. That's always.
Okay. End of story. Let's end of that story.
Okay.
Let's go to recalls, because every week I get a recall email in my computer about the things that have come out in the preceding week that are now out. For
which one of
the
your
dealers
cars?
To know. And not wait. My cars. Just easy. Not my cars. It's a whole list, and I go through it to see what's relevant. And not when you have a loose crimp fastener may allow fuel line to leak on a manufacturer's vehicle. That is a recall because it's a potential safety situation. If the crimped fastener falls off underneath the car, who the hell knows where that is? You as an owner are never going to know that. They have to publish this out there, and it gets to dealers. It may not get to the public. And that you as the owner are going to eventually find that something got done, or you're going to get a letter in the mail. I got one for my Hyundai Sonata about a seatbelt problem. I'm not going to get it fixed till the next oil change. How you respond to these things you get in the mail is going to be up to you. And again, knowledge can be king, and you may or may not need to act quickly. But you may not know that. Call your dealer and find out. That's that on that.
Meaning if you hear about a recall and it might involve you call
you're going to get a recall in the mail eventually, but long after I hear about it in the computer.
But what I'm saying is, or if it is, I'm using quotation, air quote, if it's severe, sometimes it will be on the news. When you hear something like that, your best
bet.
But
it has a short shelf time. News has a short shelf time.
Well,
you don't hear about it week after week until you've gotten something in the mail either. So you may not even hear it at all if you don't watch news. And I know people who do not listen to news or watch TV, and they will be the last to know. We're closing up. I'm going to close with one thing. VW dealers prep for tough EV economics. Well, this is the EV economics is something that we have not talked about, and I've been thinking about it since Tesla, because they don't have dealership networks. Are you going to have to service electric vehicle cars like you service non-electric
vehicles.
Well,
they need tires and brakes.
Yes, but does that mean you have to go to a dealer every week? You can go to a tire manufacturer, or you can go to Midas, or you can go to any of these independent things and never see your dealer again, possibly with electric vehicle cars, except they may be too complex for anything but dealers to fix.
That'll be for another time.
Okay.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.